Hello and welcome to the Foundry Church podcast. My name is Joseph. I'm the worship pastor here at the Foundry Church in Winter Springs, Florida. Thank you so much for spending some of your week with us. What you're about to hear is one of the messages from our current sermon series called The Weight of Paper. We don't do this very often, but it's a series about money. And we have set out in this series about money to not tell you that you need to give more to the church or to tell you how to budget or how to get out of debt and build wealth for your future legacy and that sort of thing. There are plenty of places you can find that information. What we're trying to do is talk about spiritual observations regarding money, mostly from like the wisdom literature in the Old Testament. The reality is that money carries a weight in our lives. It is a concrete thing that we have a certain amount of, and we have to live with what we have to a large extent. And so there's a weight, there's a heaviness that comes with that. But on the flip side of that is sort of the idea that most of us would say deep down, we know that money is not the most important thing. It's not as important as relationships and family. It's not as important as being a person of honesty and integrity. It's not as important as our faith. And so striking that balance between holding on to money and our ideas about money tightly enough that we're in control of what's happening with our money, but not so tightly that it begins to take control of us. So that being said, that being rambled, here we go with this message from The Weight of Paper.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so very glad you're here, whether you're joining us in person or online. My name is Seth, and this is The Foundry, where we're all about a better you and a better world. We are in the final week of our series that we're calling The Weight of Paper. Next week, we begin a brand new series, like our Easter series, that we're calling The Escaping Goat. Dun, thank you. Dun, dun, dun. Also, there's going to be a like devotional thing that kind of goes with that. That'll start like next week as well. So you can, the staff and stuff is going through that. If you want to participate, that's awesome. It'll go from next week through Easter. So keep an eye out for that. So today we wrap up. We've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about the numbers and the story and the flow. We've talked about how money is both a mirror and our teacher. We've talked about this weird paradoxical nature to money, that is, it's yours and it's not yours, and the weird paradox of like scattering and how somehow when you scatter, like more shows up. It's this weird, it's a really weird sort of thing. So today, what I want to do is I want to give you like six more thoughts, six more observations or ideas, and then one more thought. So technically it's seven, but I didn't want you to get overwhelmed. So it's six thoughts plus one extra thought. I thought that might be the better way to approach it. Okay, so let's get into it. The first thought of my ideas that I would like to present. Thought number one, there is a season. When it comes to money, we go through different seasons, obviously. Sometimes we go through a season of fasting. Sometimes we go through a season of feasting. Sometimes you're spending as little as possible. Sometimes you're splurging a little bit. Solomon talks about this in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. We're not going to read the whole thing, but you may be familiar with this. He says, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot. There is a time when money is tight, and there may be a time where money is a bit more abundant, right? This is our experience with money. There's a time and season for everything because life is dynamic. Things happen in this life. If you work in some sort of sales or commission-based job, like you are familiar with this kind of roller coaster of the finances, aren't you? Even if you don't work in these realms, we still go through moments where like things come up, something unexpected happens. Maybe you lose your job, whatever, and maybe there's some sort of medical bill that you have to pay. And we're kind of oscillating between these times of like fasting and feasting, and that's okay. Like that's, I think, how it goes. And I think it's helpful to remember that for better or worse, like no matter where you're at, that will not last forever. Sometimes you need to tighten up your spending. Sometimes you can loosen the purse strings a little bit. The odds are, whichever side of that you're on, it's not going to last forever, right? Like, for example, when Jess and I first got married, we went through an intentional time of like fasting because we were trying to get out of debt. And over the course of a couple years, we did really good at this, and we paid down a lot of our debt, so much so that it freed us up to pursue some other passions. Like, I ended up going to work for, like, to help establish this nonprofit, and so we cut down to living on one salary, which was hers because she makes more money than I do because smarter, I guess. So, amen. So I'm grateful. So because of that, we did this nonprofit thing, and that went well. But then eventually she got pregnant, and then I was like, oh, I need to like get a job that earns money. And so I started to look for work, but I couldn't find work. And then we entered into like this unintentional time of fasting, which is more difficult. But then a little bit later, I got a new job. And so then we had two incomes and the baby wasn't here yet, so we had a little bit of like extra, and so we did a little bit of splurging. We went out and we bought our first mattress together. Yeah, that's a big deal, because like the queen mattress that I'd had for 57 years that had been passed down through the generations, it like wasn't working so well. So we were living the good life on the California King, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, there's a season of fasting and a season of feasting. Neither one will last forever, so do the thing you need to do when you need to do it, and don't let that alone determine your sense of joy or happiness. It doesn't take money to have a good life. I know a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people, who have a lot less than I have, who are filled with a lot of joy and happiness. I've also seen a lot of people with a lot more than I have, who can sometimes be quite miserable, right? So, there's a season. Number two. Physical stuff has a spiritual weight. This is the second idea. We'll keep this one pretty brief. I think it's important to keep in mind, the same way that we've been talking about the weight of paper, right? That these little green pieces of paper, although light in actual physical weight, they can have this ability to create this enormous amount of pressure on us. I think this is the same when it comes to the stuff that we buy, the stuff that we accumulate. I think we need to remember that there is a spiritual component to the stuff that we have as well, right? Like if I go into my shed to our garage, I have a lot of like helpful, useful tool type stuff. That's great. There's also like just other stuff. Stuff that is not super useful or super, just kind of junk, you know what I'm talking about? And so sometimes when I walk into the shed, especially if it's a bit out of sorts or if my kids were looking for something and they just like threw everything else around, I walk into that shed, and although I'm not physically carrying anything, all of that I've accumulated begins to feel weighty. Do you know what I'm talking about? You've ever felt this? Maybe you have a room at your house where you feel this kind of same way, where you're like, oh, it's like, I don't even really love going in there because there's just all this stuff, and it weighs on me. Yeah, yeah, the physical stuff we have, if we're not careful, can like turn around and like put this weight on us, this burden of stuff and accumulation, which, by the way, did you know there was a free garage sale coming up? Like that's, yeah, like that's actually a good thing. Like this is a way to like come out from under some of that stuff. You should look into it. I heard Joe talking about it. I'm not sure, but so when you're getting ready to buy stuff, right? Maybe you just keep in mind, like, is this something that I really really need? Because eventually, at some point, that thing that you think you need is going to become like this. Like it has the potential to become a bit of a burden. So physical stuff does carry like the spiritual weight. Number three, be mindful of the energy that you give to your money. There's a certain amount of energy that we give to money. Sometimes it's in the form of wishing we had more. Sometimes it's in the form of trying to protect what we already have. Sometimes it's in the form of being anxious and worried because we don't have enough. Sometimes it's in the form of being anxious and worried because we have some and we don't know what to do with it. The more and more energy that we give to it, the more and more we allow it to be in control of us. And maybe you've ever seen somebody that's come into like money, like they didn't have it, and then all of a sudden they do. Maybe it was like a raise or a new job, or maybe they got some sort of inheritance. Right? There can be this weird thing that happens where even after somebody like gains more, that somehow even in the gaining of more, their grip on money actually gets tighter, and money's grip on them gets tighter as well. Like they get this influx of money and then they just kind of sit on it. They sit on it and they don't do anything with it. And it may, like, on the surface appear to be very wise and very prudent. But what can happen is that they just sit there and the money's grip tightens on them, because before there's this underlying fear that this is all that's coming, right? There's this underlying fear that, okay, now I've got it, and I'm not sure if any more is going to get here, so I have to hold on to it. So the energy that they used to worry about, like, is there going to be more, is now spent in trying to protect the thing they have. They used to be worried that there was no pile, now there is a pile, and now we're worried about protecting the pile, right? There's a difference between fear and prudence when it comes to your finances. Prudence is being careful and paying attention to the numbers. Fear is driven by this idea of scarcity. And what can happen is that we end up spending as much, if not more, energy on protecting the money as we used to spend on just wishing we had it, which is something that you may find, like, maybe as you get older, right? When you're young and you get married or you're living your single life, you're like, oh, if we could just have, we could just have, we just have. And you spend all this energy wishing for more. But then you, over the course of your life, accumulate and, like, start to build up these funds. And then you get older and it's like, I have to protect, I have to protect, I have to protect, right? If we're not careful, we spend so much energy trying to get more or protect what we have that money's grip gets tighter on us. Proverbs 37, I forgot to send the second part of this to the slide people, so this is only half of it, so you'll have to listen to the second half. The first half says this: two things I ask of you, Lord, do not refuse me before I die. Verse 8, which you don't see, listen carefully. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Doesn't that actually sound a bit freeing? This is a bit like Goldilocks, isn't it? The porridge is too hot. No, the porridge is too cold. This one's just right. It's like you're saying, like, I don't want to have too much. I don't want to have too little. If I have too much, I may spend my energy protecting it and being worried about that all the time. But if I don't have enough, I may spend my energy worrying about that all the time. But if I have enough, maybe knowing that I have enough, like, that will allow me to loosen my grip a little bit. Maybe that will allow me to participate in the flow, and then I'm free to use my energy for something else. So, number three, be mindful of the energy that you give to your money. Number four, don't be afraid to answer your questions. Don't be afraid to answer your questions. Sometimes when it comes to money, we live with all these various questions in our mind. What would it be like to do this? What would it be like to own that thing? And sometimes we allow these questions to, like, dominate kind of our being. We allow the questions to have some sort of power over us. They can preoccupy our thoughts. They can absorb our energies. But the good news is, like we talked about last week, is that, like, it's your money. It's your money, so you have the freedom and the agency to try things. You can do stuff with it. You could try things out. You will find answer to your questions. You can find answers to your questions if you will allow yourself to do this. And by answering your questions, you can let go of the power that the questions have on you. Right? So, like, man, what would it be like if I was able to get a brand new toaster? That's four. But, like, what if it was like if I was able to get a brand new car? I really want that kind of car. Well, okay. You want that new car? You look at the numbers. Pay attention to the numbers. Be mindful of the story that you're telling yourself concerning the numbers. And then if you're able to, get the car. That will answer your questions, right? Oh, this was a great idea. It's everything I hoped it would be. It's meeting my needs. It's making me feel how I want to feel. Okay, great. Awesome. You can stop worrying about that now. Or maybe you get the car and you go, this isn't what I thought it would be. Oh, this didn't do anything I wanted to do. Oh, this doesn't make me feel the way I wanted to feel. Okay, great. Everything's your teacher. Sell the car. Move on. You got your questions answered, and now you don't have to keep worrying about it. Now you're free to do something else. If we will take all the weird thoughts and ideas concerning money and wants and desires and stuff we have and turn them into questions, it can help take the charge out of that thing. It can help free you up a little bit because you can answer a lot of the questions and then you can move on. There's a great example of this in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, coming from King Solomon again. We used this passage last week, so we're going to reread this and then look at the next verse. It says, he says, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. Okay, so Solomon has all these questions. What would it be like if I did this? What would it be like if I built that? What would it be like? And then, you know, he had the wealth, the resources to do what he wanted. He answered these questions. And then in verse 10, you skip down a few verses, it continues. He said, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and yet this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. So Solomon was able to answer his questions of what would it be like to do this? What would it be like to own that? He found out what it was like. He got the answers. And what he learned was everything that he thought was going to bring him to a place of satisfaction and fulfillment did not satisfy and it did not fulfill. He answered his questions, and what he learned was through the process that the happiness that he was looking for wasn't found in something else, or it wasn't somewhere else. Right? So maybe the question for us is, like, what's the thing that you've been maybe holding on to for a little while, going, oh man, I just wish I could do that. I wish I could buy one of those. Okay, make a list. Write it down. Everything with money is better when it's dragged out into the open. Name it. Name it. Keep an eye on the numbers. Pay attention to the story, and then try it. Great. Big deal. Right? Don't be afraid to answer your questions. Number five, practice what you preach. So for me, growing up as a kid, I think my parents did a pretty good job of imparting like a pretty balanced perspective of our family's finances. Right? I knew we weren't rich. My McGregor soccer cleats from Kmart informed me of that. Right? I knew we weren't rich, but I also knew we weren't poor. I knew there were some things that we could afford to do and some things that we couldn't afford to do. We could make the 18-hour drive to my grandmother's house in Southern Illinois in our Dodge Caravan with the wood panel on the side, but it would be a bit tight if we tried to all fly there, right? That sort of thing. Or we were well off enough that we could go out to dinner like on a weekly basis, but the kids drank water. Not because it was a healthier option, because it was free, right? This is where I learned to make lemonade. Free water, free lemons, free sugar. It's perfect. Inevitably, as it is with kind of all generations, what we see is that the previous generations before us like to inform us about how hard it was for them. Right? My family, we were pretty well balanced. Some things we could do, some we couldn't. But inevitably, the previous generation likes to tell stories about how tough it was. And the more time that passes, like it's like fish stories, the bigger the fish gets, right? And so by the time you're like three generations away, your parents are telling you stories about how they were one of 17 kids and they all had to share the same pants. You know what I'm talking about? Actually, my dad was the youngest of three. He was the baby, and he had two older sisters, which means that he was wearing double hand-me-down girls' clothes to school from time to time, which as I say that out loud might explain a few things. So every generation has their war stories about how they grew up poor, and now I look at my three kids, and some days they're really awesome, and some days they're kind of awful. But when I look at them and I look at their behavior and I see how they're doing things, I'm like, you guys have no idea how good you have it, right? Have you ever had this thought? You ever, like, to people beneath you, not beneath you, like younger than you, like, you guys have no idea how good you have it. Like, I hear them say stuff and I just want to smack them sometimes. I'm like, I don't know who you think you are. Like, that's not who we are. I don't know. Like, one time we went to we got invited to a really fancy dinner, and it was like they were covering everything. And when we sat down, they told our kids, like, hey, you can have whatever you want, which obviously didn't come from their parents. Like, I'm not telling my kids they could have whatever they want, but the people we were with were like, you can have whatever you want. And so all of a sudden, my kids turned into like these snooty little like billionaire children or something. We're like, yes, good sir. Could I have some, I would like some mint chocolate chip ice cream, but if you could remove the mints from the chocolate chips from the ice cream, that would be fantastic. And if you wouldn't mind like flying in some cage-free organic whipped cream from the south of France, putting a dollop on it. Like, I was like, who are these kids? I don't know where they came from or why they got weird accents, but it was just the moment they were given this like free kind of like thing, they turned into like, I don't want my kids to live this way. I don't want my kids growing up with like to be these snooty jerks. I don't want them to live with this mindset that like everybody should give them everything all the time, everything that every way they want it. I want my kids to grow up with like a mindset of generosity and gratitude. I don't want them to be spoiled brats. I want them to be mindful. I want them to be grateful. I want them to learn to be content with what they have, whether they have a little or whether they have a lot. Proverbs 15 says this, better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth, with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. Better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred. Philippians 4:12 says this, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. These are the things I want my kids to learn, right? I want them to grab a hold of this in such a way that this sinks deep within who they are. But the way that I do that is not by smacking the mint chocolate chip ice cream out of their hands and then berating them with stories about how when I was growing up, all my friends had Super Nintendos and I just had the crappy Atari that my dad got out of the trash. It worked. We loved it. Joust is my favorite game, but like all the other kids had Super Nintendos and I got the dumpster Atari. Like that's not actually going to help my kids, is it? That's not going to help them. I cannot recreate the conditions of my earlier life for them. You cannot force someone to appreciate what they have by endlessly berating them with stories about how hard it was for you growing up. It's an empty practice. It's an empty exercise. Like, what do you think is actually going to happen when you keep hitting them with this stuff? That you're going to regale them with with a great story of incredible tragedy that is your childhood, and then they're going to become instantly like enlightened and solemnly vow to live above the meaningless materiality of the world, and they will never be ungrateful again. And no, like that's not how it works. That's not going to make things any better. Trying to get your kids to be grateful by endlessly repeating how tough it was for you doesn't work. How could they possibly understand what it was like for you? They can only understand what it's like for them. Your story is not their story, the same way that your parents' story was not your story. The way that you're going to get your kids to get whatever it is you're trying to teach them is by practicing what you preach. They're going to pick up gratitude and generosity from watching you. And they're watching. They're always watching. They're always absorbing. They're always learning from you, which means you have a great deal of responsibility, but it also means you have a great deal of influence. So what are they seeing? What are they learning? Are they seeing clinging and holding tightly and gripping and fear and scarcity? Or are they seeing joy and generosity and holding loosely and participating in the flow? Right? So much of our thoughts concerning money is kind of just what we pick up along the way. Our learning is less about what you tell them than a whole lot more about what you show them. Practice what you preach. Right? The thing that I can tell you that I picked up from my parents, I don't ever remember if they said this directly to me, but the thing that I know that has always been there is that whether it was a time of a feasting or a time of fasting, I was shown that God would always provide. That's something that I carry with me. That's something that sits deep within my being. I don't wrestle with, will we be okay? I don't carry that with me. I don't wrestle with, will we make it through? I trust that God will provide. I learned that from my parents, by watching, by seeing. What a blessing that is to me. Practice what you preach. Because I can almost guarantee you that you will get a lot farther with your kids, and that insight will last a lot longer by practicing what you preach than by simply just preaching what you preach. Number six, try and see what happens. Sometimes when it comes to money, and especially when it comes to giving, and especially, like, double especially when it comes to giving in the church, there's often all this, like, auxiliary issues that come into play, right? Most people seem to have this, like, certain comfort level when it comes to their giving. Like, yeah, I'm okay with giving $20 here. I'm okay with giving $100 to that thing. But so much of that is like these mental parameters that we've set up for ourselves rather than, like, based on, like, the reality of the numbers, right? I also know that many people, when you hear the church is talking about giving, there's this immediate assumption that we're just talking about you giving more to us, right? Like, why else would we talk about it? Well, that's kind of dumb. I also know that, like, there's a lot of baggage associated with money and giving and tithing in the church. I also know that just as, like, a topic, some people don't find, like, money and giving that, like, it's just not, is it fun? We don't think of it as fun. We're like, oh, here we go. Here comes the helping of guilt. Thank you. I'll take that and go on my way. Like, and to me, I think this is really a shame, because I think the church for a long time now has been, like, harping on one tiny component of a much larger idea. And I think by doing this, we've undermined and tainted this beautiful universal concept of the flow, right? And so now so many people have this, like, PTSD when you bring up money in church. So I want to look at two verses that, if you've been around the church, will probably be, like, hyper familiar. You've probably heard them. They've been used as a way to get you to give more money. But what I want to do is I want to look at something within them that maybe you haven't seen before, okay? So 2 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul says this: remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. All right, yeah, we've heard this one. That's a good one. I think it's interesting. Paul is kind of, like, affirming the things that we've highlighted in the wisdom literature about money, like Proverbs 11, where it says those who give freely will increase all the more. Those who withhold will come to a place of lack. This is the universal law of sowing and reaping. You reap what you sow. I think when it comes to our finances, I think we kind of take that whole phrasing, and I think we approach it maybe backwards. I think sometimes we approach it with the idea of, well, how much can I sow? What can I afford to sow? And I think maybe if we approached it from, like, how much do I want to reap? If I started with that, then that would answer the question of, well, how much should I be sowing, right? So that's it. That's just one little thing. So then in verse 7, it says, each of you should have give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. So I want to look at the word reluctant, compulsion, and cheerful in the Greek text, because when you see these things kind of in their original form, it does paint an interesting picture. Okay, so reluctantly is the word lupe, which is sadness, grief, heaviness, or sorrow. So each one of you must decide in your heart what to give. Don't give with sadness, grief, heaviness, or sorrow. Compulsion is anike, distress, trouble, under compulsion, or out of a sense of duty. So give what you have decided in your heart. Do not give from a place of sadness or heaviness or sorrow, or from a place of distress or a sense of duty or obligation, which is basically the church's approach to giving. Okay, cheerful. Hilaros, which is happy, cheerful, merry, hilarious. This is actually where we get our word for hilarious, which I find hilarious. I love that hilarity is connected to this idea of cheerful, and that it's also connected to the idea of money. I love that hilarity is connected to the idea of giving. This is about a particular spirit, isn't it? A spirit of joy, a joyful spirit. In fact, the ancient Romans, they had a whole series of festivals that were called the Hilaria, the Hilarium. And so they would be like this week-long series of festivals that was just rejoicing over all these various things in Rome. And part of the rules or part of the custom of the festival is that no one was allowed to show symptoms of grief or sorrow. It was the Hilaria, right? So give what you have decided in your heart. Don't give from a place of sadness or heaviness or sorrow. Don't give from a place of distress. Don't give out of duty or obligation. Because if that's where you're giving from, I'm not sure that God wants it. Because that's not really who God is. That's not what God is like. God wants your approach to giving to be one of joy, happiness, cheer. There's a hilarity to it. Do you give hilariously? Do you think of, have you ever used the word hilarious when you think about giving something away? Probably not. All right, now stay with me and we'll come back to this thought. The other common verse, Malachi chapter 3, you may be familiar with this as well. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it. So the part that When it comes to giving, when it comes to the tithe, it looks like kind of God throws down the gauntlet here a bit, doesn't it? Like, test me, try me. You don't know who you're messing with here. Test me with this and see if I don't throw open the floodgates. And like, God is threatening to drown you in blessing. It's like a weirdly like aggressive threat of a blessing. It's kind of hilarious, actually, and really it should be quite affirming, quite confidence boosting when it comes to our finances, when it comes to our giving. But it's also kind of like God is directly affirming this whole idea of the larger flow that we've been talking about, right? That when you're giving freely, when you're scattering widely, when you're holding your resources loosely, when you realize that the money is yours and it's not yours, it allows you to step into this flow. And you understand that as you give more, the more you give away, the more that continues to come in your general direction, right? So maybe the reason God loves a cheerful giver is because a cheerful giver or a hilarious giver is one who embraces this paradoxical wisdom and reality, who understands how ridiculous of a concept this actually is. Right? It makes no sense. Do you understand? This is like a giant cosmic joke. If you want to have more, you give more away. It's a joke. And maybe that's the whole thing, that when I give to God or when I give freely from what I have, there's not less, there's more. That's hilarious. We've been so churchified with this that we've forgot, like, what a ridiculous premise this whole thing is. And so maybe it's like the cheerful giver is the one who's in on the joke. Maybe the cheerful giver is like the one who understands how insanely ridiculous this is, but still continues to participate in it. They're in on the joke, and I believe God has a sense of humor. Right? God's whole invitation is like, try it and see what happens. Try it and see what happens. You think you can outgive me? Good luck. Here, why don't you give me 10%? Watch this. I'm going to open up the floodgates. You're going to drown in blessing. Like, that's funny. Like, that's a weird thing. Now, in light of this, like, hilarious giving stuff, you guys don't seem to think it's hilarious. We did something silly this week that I thought was funny, aside from the guy in the elephant costume passing out balloons. I don't know if you saw him. That was pretty funny. Thanks to Rob Gagnon for dressing up, playing along. It's like we take ourselves too serious in church. Lighten up, lighten up. We did something, we added some instructions to the giving box. It's really dumb. It's really simple, but I'll explain it just in case you didn't get it. So there's two steps. Step one, you put your money in the box. This is really complicated. Or you can give online. There's a QR code there. Step two, you push the red button. That's it. And the red button has like this like cycle of like three different things that makes noises or plays a song or says good job. Just because it's silly. It's fun. Why not? Let's have some joy in what we're doing. Like if we truly understand the flow and if we truly understand that the more we scatter, the more we get, like how do we not have more joy when it comes to any sort of giving away? I don't know. I think we just need to do better. I think we need to have more fun with this. Stop taking it so serious. Yes, it's money. It's heavy. It's weighted. It's the elephant. But also, it's just money. And whatever story we tell shapes how we use the finances. Like maybe number seven, we just need a better story. Number seven, we need a better story. Okay, let's go back to our passage in 2 Corinthians. Paul says God loves a hilarious giver, a cheerful giver. And then comes verse 8, and I want to focus on this because there's something in here that I think maybe we miss from time to time. Verse 8, and God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. So the part that we typically focus on here is like God's provisions, right? Yeah, that's awesome. It is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all times and all things, you will have what you need. That's an incredible thought. I don't believe that this is rooted in any sort of like fantasy or denial or rejection of the reality of the weight of the numbers. Like, I think Paul is acknowledging all of that. That's why he says, you will have what you need in all things at all times. In the fasting, in the feasting, he will take care of you. Paul is acknowledging the good times and the bad. But I think the part that we gloss over here is the implication of having what you need. Why? In order to abound in every good work. You see, I think part of the beauty of what this is pointing to is Paul is saying, you have these blessings for a reason. You have a work to do. You have a purpose here. God is able to provide for you so that you can do the thing that you need to do here. To me, that's incredible. The abundant blessing of God is not about stockpiling. It's not about being the one who gets to the end with the most toys. This is about having enough so that at all times and in all things, you can do what you need to do here, right? So we need a better story. We need a better story than I'm just here to accumulate stuff. I'm just here to put food on the table. I'm just trying to afford to be able to go on more vacations. I'm just trying to earn enough so that I can live at a certain level of comfort in my life. That's kind of like elephant-based lifestyle. That's a numbers-only way of living. And if that's our goal, then no matter what you have, it will never be enough. If that's all that's driving us, if all we're doing is like paying the bills, then we are essentially trapped under the weight of paper. And I think the thing that Paul is talking about is like this invitation. It's this invitation to step into this larger flow that says you will be blessed with what you need so that you can keep passing along the blessing so that you can do the thing that you are here to do. That's pretty awesome. I think that's a better story. There's a story about this master teacher named Akiva, and the story goes that one day he was walking to his village. On his way to his village, he was deep in thought, and he got like sidetracked from where he was, and so he missed the path to walk to his village. Well, it wasn't before long that he ended up in front of this like Roman military fortress, and just about the time he realized that he had gone past his path, he was getting ready to turn around, and one of the guards on top of the gate yelled down to him, and the guard said, "Who are you, and what are you doing here?" To which Akiva replied, "What was that?" The guard said again, "Who are you and what are you doing here?" To which the master teacher paused for a second and he said, "What do they pay you?" The soldier said, "5 drachmas a week." He said, Akiva says back to the guard, I will pay you twice that amount if you will come to my house every morning and ask me those same two questions. Who are you and what are you doing here? Who are you and what are you doing here? So much of our relationship with money has to do with these two questions, doesn't it? Who are you and what are you doing here? Because if you can find the bigger thing, you will have a better story. And having a better story will help guide and shape the numbers. In fact, actually, just this morning, I saw a headline. It was like on the Apple News feed. It just come up as I was scrolling through. And it was really interesting. I was like, oh, I should use that. And I thought, oh, don't use that. You're going to take up too much time. And then I thought, no, just use it anyways. It's fine. Here's the headline. It said, Chris Pine, you know Chris Pine, the actor? He was like in Star Trek. Okay. Chris Pine is done conforming for Hollywood. The actor, on a wake-up call, he didn't know he needed. Listen to what he says. His quotes, I was rich and successful. And I'm like, what is it that I'm doing and why? That was this morning. Isn't that the question? Chris Pine is asking the same question. He's got all this stuff and yet he's going, who am I and what am I doing here? Who am I and what am I doing here? You have to have the better story, and the story will help to determine what you're doing with the rest of your life and your finances. If you find the better thing, you have the better story, and the better story will help to guide the numbers. And based on what Paul says, like, you'll have what you need. The numbers will fall in place because you're doing the thing that you're here to do. The incredible gift of all of this to me is that it seems like when we're doing the thing that we're here to do, when you're participating in this larger flow and you're trusting that God is going to keep sending your way the very things you need to do it, it actually becomes quite freeing, doesn't it? What a beautiful place to live from. It actually allows you to be free from the incredible weight of paper that so many of us seem to wrestle with. You don't have to live this way. Come out from that. Come out from that. Trust that God will provide. Whether it's fasting or feasting, He will be there for you to take care of you. Come out from the weight of paper. You don't have to live there.
Thank you once again for spending some time with us this week. We hope that message was challenging in some good ways and inspiring in some good ways and hopeful in some good ways. And we hope that that God is doing something in your heart, maybe in your mind, perhaps, to help you find that balance between the concrete realities of money in our lives and sort of the more ethereal, like spiritual observations and the way that we approach it, the way we view it, and the value that we give it in our deepest, like inmost self. You can find out more about what we're doing here at the Foundry Church either by going to our website, that's www.thefoundryc.org, or you can check out our app if you go to your app store on iPhone or Android and search for Church Center. You'll find the app. Once you open it up, you'll be able to find our church within the app, and then that's like your gateway to everything that's happening at our church in terms of information and things you can be involved with and things you can participate in various ways. For now, that will do it for the Foundry Church podcast. Thank you once again for spending some time with us this week. We'll see you next time.